Welcome to the Lawyerist Podcast, a series of discussions with entrepreneurs and innovators about building a successful law practice in today's challenging and constantly changing legal market. Lawyerist supports attorneys building client-centered and future-oriented small law firms through community, content, and coaching, both online and through the Lawyerist Lab and Accelerator. And now, here are the co-authors of the Small Firm Roadmap and your podcast hosts.
Hi, I'm Laura Briggs.
And I'm Stephanie Everett, and this is episode 298 of the Lawyerist Podcast, part of the Legal Talk Network. In today's episode, we're talking with Michael Abrashoff about how to take an underperforming team to high achievers.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Nackley.io, Text Expander, Back Office Betties, and LawPay. We wouldn't be able to do this show without their support, so stay tuned, and we'll tell you a little bit more about them later on.
So Laura, you just got back from a really fun trip.
Yeah, and I think that makes a good jumping off point to talk about this idea of how do you take time off even now. I mean, I had accumulated vacation time and my husband had accumulated vacation time. And I think when this whole pandemic first started, we all defaulted to let's just push that off in the future. Like, surely this will be over with by the fall or the winter and we can go back to life as normal. And obviously that hasn't happened. So we had to get really creative. And I think some other people on our team have done this too with taking time off. Like, how do you take a socially distanced trip? So we went backcountry camping and hiking in the Badlands because we could be socially distanced from people, and we just carried everything with us so that we didn't have to stay in a whole lot of different hotel rooms and potentially expose ourselves or whatever. And it was really interesting. There are people out and about, but all the national parks we visited were a lot quieter. I know you went camping recently too, right?
I don't think we can call it camping.
Was it glamping?
we got a cabin at a state park. So it wasn't like it was in the outdoors area, but let's be honest. I have yet to camp like traditionally, like sleep outside in my life.
Okay.
Everyone always tells me when they hear that, oh, I'm totally going to take you camping. And I'm like, you'll be the 500th person to say that to me in my life, but whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you getting outdoors, taking time away. I mean, even like, honestly, tonight, my husband needed to go to a town about 3.5 hours away. And we were like, you know what, let's just make a little family day trip out of it. And there's some places we like to hike. So we're just going to go for a day in the middle of the week. But it's good to you need that time to rejuvenate yourself, right?
Yeah, you do. And I expect a lot of people, especially if you're a firm owner, you've probably just been nose to the grindstone for months now, trying to weather all of these different storms and figure out what your law firm's new normal looks like. But that may have come at the expense of taking time off. And that goes for your employees to like encourage them to actually take time off. And you may have to get creative. You know, here at Lawyerist, employees get certain things on anniversaries of their working relationship with Lawyerist. And so we had a team member who just hit 1 year, and that would traditionally come with a spa day or a date night. And obviously that's harder to do with the pandemic too, but they are going to have a great date night in and do some nice stuff. So take those little opportunities to step away if you can, and make sure you've blocked it in your calendar, right? Like not just, oh, well, I should take time off. I think it's helpful sometimes to look ahead into the future and say, you know what, I might need to take a day a couple of weeks from now and not really have any specific plans, but plan not to work.
Yeah. And maybe try something new, like go horseback riding, go camping, do something outdoors that you might not traditionally do, and you might have a really fun time doing it.
Absolutely. Now we've got a brief sponsored conversation with Kim Mayberry from Nackley.io, and then my conversation with Mike.
Hi, I'm Kim Mayberry, and I'm the co-founder and CEO of Nackley. And Nackley is a document automation solution that helps firms like yours be more efficient.
Awesome. We're happy to have you here on the podcast. Can you tell me a little bit about your journey? How did you decide to start Nackley?
We have been doing document automation consulting for 20 years now. And a couple of years ago, we started looking at the solutions that were out there. The ones that we were using weren't quite working for our clients and felt like, you know what, lawyers need better ways to create documents and connect with all their systems. And started the journey and last year released the product and have continued to grow from there and are really excited about what we've been able to accomplish over the last couple of years to make it easier for solo firms to be able to get in, automate their documents, and give their clients a bigger firm experience.
Where do you think the biggest loss of time is around document automation? So someone who either is using a software that isn't the right solution or they're not doing document automation at all, what do you think is the biggest challenge there?
The biggest challenge is, one, if you're not doing document automation, you're spending a lot more time drafting your documents than you should be. Those that move from, you know, the standard Word, copy, replace, you know, templates or using the last client's document is when they go to document automation, they really are saving 80 to 90% of the time that they were taking to go through and draft documents for a specific client. Now, getting those templates automated in the first place can be one of the most daunting tasks to getting to that efficiency. And with NACLE, we've done some things that are making it easier to get from no automation to automation and speeding up the process of doing that.
Yeah, I can imagine that's a big challenge when you don't have anything automated and kind of going, well, great, now I'm going to have to spend more time to set things up. But it's good to know there's ways to speed that process along. What is unique about your software when compared with some of the other document automation tools out there?
So a couple of things that we've done, we have logic in the document. So you can go through and do conditional paragraphs, whatever you need there. We have a client intake process. So you can actually have a link that you send to your clients to fill out information online and have that information flow into the system. And we have the ability to connect multiple systems together. So if you have the Clios or the Practice Panthers, we can connect that data together so that you really are trying to get to single entry and how you go about doing that. And really the fundamental piece that we put in place to start this is when you automate a document, it automatically creates a intake interview for you that can hide and show questions based on how you automated the document, which really is a time saver. In other systems out there that we've used over the years, you know, really you're automating the document and then you're automating the interview, the intake process. And with NACLE, we're able to make it so that you only have to do one of those and it automatically flows in. So it really becomes a time saver that way in the automation.
That makes sense. Now, I know one of the special offers that you have for Lawyerist listeners is some money off a sort of jumpstart package, which we'll talk about in a second. Can you explain a little bit about what you mean when you say something is a jumpstart project call? How does that help an attorney?
Right. So usually when you go into a document automation project, there may be some moments of feeling a little bit overwhelmed because really you're going through the process of creating a system that you've never created before. And what the jumpstart does is depending on which package you choose is that you're going to have access to someone who has been doing automation for a long time. They're experts in this so that they can guide you through the process of automating your documents. And with that, we have a certain amount of calls that we're going to be on there with you. We're going to go through and set up basically the variable structure so that based on our years of experience in document automation, we can go through and set up the structure that's going to work for you. And then also just the training that goes along with just making sure that you're successful in your project. So that's really what a jumpstart is to basically jumpstart you into automating your documents.
Wonderful. Lawyerist listeners can get $100 off a jumpstart package by visiting nackly.io/lawyerist. And that's nackly.io/lawyerist.
Hi, Laura. My name is Mike Abershoff. I'm author of Midshipmanship, and I used to be a Navy captain, got command of a destroyer. And when I got command, it was one of the worst performers in the Pacific Fleet. And 15 months later, we got the trophy for being the best while using the same crew. And so we got featured in the Harvard Business Review and Fast Company magazine. And now people ask me to come and be on podcasts all the time.
And we're happy to have you on our podcast. And first of all, thank you for your service. My husband was in the Navy for 14 years, so always appreciate other people who have made that commitment and sacrifice that you do. So appreciate that. One of the things that really stuck out to me from your book is this idea of seeing the ship through the eyes of the crew. So if you're a leader hearing that on this podcast for the first time and realize, I've never really done that, I don't know how to do that, what is the first step towards seeing things the way that the people on your team would see them?
So it was after I took command of the ship. And when there's a change of command, it's a big deal. Work stops a month prior, crew paints the ship from top to bottom. They pitch a tent on the flight deck, put out 300 chairs for the visiting dignitaries. The admiral comes and gives a long-winded speech about how great the outgoing guy is. Whole ceremony takes about 90 minutes. At the end of the ceremony, as my predecessor was leaving the ship for the final time with his parents and his wife and his kids, and as his departure was announced on the public address system, my new crew stood and cheered at the fact that he was leaving. And in my entire career, I had never heard of or witnessed such a sign of disrespect. And the first thought that went through my mind was, what do I have to do to keep that from happening to me 2 years from now when I leave the ship? And so it hit me. I can't order excellence sitting in the captain's chair all day long. So I spent my days walking the ship and talking to sailors. And for the first time in my career, actually listening to. And one of them said to me, Captain, we have a term to describe the organization on this ship. He said, this ship is like a tree full of monkeys. Whenever you look down from the top of the tree, all you ever see are smiling faces coming back at you. When we look up from the bottom branch, we have an entirely different view of the organization. And that's when it hit me, I need to start putting myself in their shoes and viewing the operation through their eyes. And then it will enable me to communicate better with them where we're going, why we have to have such high standards, and why it's in our own best interest. So that enabled me to understand that we may be talking to them in the language we understand. We may not be talking to them in the language that they receive it in. And I've got a wonderfully diverse crew. Benfold was the first ship built from the keel up to accommodate both men and women. And we had every ethnic group possible, and each group sees things differently. And I had to make an effort to connect with each group as to why we have to have such high standards.
Those are really good points. How do you convince maybe a group of people that are feeling like, oh, we've seen others come in as leaders before with all of this enthusiasm, and maybe they mean well and maybe they don't, but how do you build that authenticity of, I really am here and interested in listening to you for the right reasons, and this is going to be a long-term commitment from me as your leader?
I interviewed every sailor on that ship individually, all 310 of them. I got to know their names, their spouses' names, their children's names, their hometowns. I found out that 25% of my crew actually liked the Dallas Cowboys. And I later found out they were the bottom 25% performers on the ship. But in these interviews, I got to know them. And I asked them what they were most proud of in their lives. And once they told me what they were most proud of in their lives, I could use that information to connect with them and to make them feel like I genuinely care about them. And if your people think you care about them, they will follow you into battle.
That's a great point. I think that oftentimes we don't take the time to talk to everyone who's a part of your team and show that you really are there because you want to get to know them. And it's not just about your desire to want to advance yourself or, you know, establish yourself in this more dominant role as a superior or a leader. So one of the challenges definitely within the military, but I think it's something that, you know, the law has in common as well, is that there's been a way of doing things for a long time and it's done that way and you normally don't question it. And one of the things that really stuck out to me from your book is how you approached this process of challenging the status quo, especially when there may be someone who's in a leadership role above you, and you have to get them to buy into your ideas, which you and your organization might feel are great ideas, but you still have to convince sort of the higher ups and get them to show that you're only bringing really good ideas to the table and have kind of thought through that. So can you talk a little bit about how you can test the waters or prove yourself to others when it comes to challenging the status quo?
So first off, I challenged the status quo internally. I said to my sailors, I don't care what your age is. I don't care what your rank is. I don't care how long you've been here. You can come to work every day and challenge every aspect of our operation. You can challenge 244 years worth of rules and regulations, customs and traditions. And if you have an idea how to improve something 1%, I want to hear from you. We can't change the rest of the Navy. So get over it. Focus on our little piece of it. And if we improve 1% a day, if we're 1% better tomorrow than we were today, nobody's going to challenge us. And if I got a great idea from a sailor, I'd implement it right on the spot. I had a public address microphone right at my desk. I'd hit the button. I'd say, Ben Fold, this is the captain. This is the idea I just got. This is who I got it from. It makes sense to me. We're going to implement it right now. And that's how the crew knew I was serious about listening to their ideas. Now, I could never do anything that would get me fired or to violate our compliance issues. But I also never asked for permission. Instead, I would send my chain of command, I call them UNODIR messages, UNODIR. It stands for unless otherwise directed, this is what I intend to do. And you know what? I never once got shot down. But instead, if I had asked for permission, 3 months later, I would have gotten a response back that said, you know, the committee we formed to investigate this wants a PowerPoint presentation by 3 o'clock today. I don't know how to do PowerPoint. I've never done one PowerPoint presentation in my life. I actually banned PowerPoint internal to my ship. I wanted my officers to learn how to speak confidently in front of people, just like lawyers. And so I didn't want them to rely on PowerPoint, so I made them stand up. And so instead of asking for permission, I kept my chain of command thoroughly informed. And they had the opportunity to say no, but they never did. And when we returned the results, that got me even more credibility, even freer rein. And as long as I kept them informed, they never gave me any pushback.
And do you think part of that is because you made an effort at your level of things to try to capture some of the metrics and the data that would convince people sort of up that chain of command?
Absolutely. Your chain of command is looking for results. And so I would feed the information to them in real time instead of having them sit there and wonder, what are they doing? I call it feed the bear. Everybody works for somebody, and that boss, I call it the bear. And so when we were at sea, I worked for 6 different mission commanders simultaneously. So I worked for 6 different bears, and I had signs placed all over the ship, feed the bear. Whenever you get a moment, feed them information. And I don't want them worrying about us. Let them worry about some other ship. And we're going to do things the way we see it. And we received a tremendous amount of autonomy as a result, and no micromanagement, because they trusted us because we proactively fed them information.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of this seems to come down to this idea of empowering your employees or empowering the people that are working with you. How do you get employees to take ownership and to feel empowered if they've never been taught that way before, or even if it's potentially the fault of your own role as leader for not doing that in the past?
So I gave them the courage to do it through the interviews. And then whenever they did give an idea, publicize it. But then I had my line in the sand. Because empowerment does not mean letting people do whatever they want to do whenever they want to do it. That's anarchy. My line in the sand was, if what you're doing could kill somebody, injure somebody, waste taxpayers' money, or do damage to the ship, don't go there without me. Because if you screw it up, I can't live with the results. But if what you're doing runs short of my line in the sand, step up to the plate and take action. And you know what? I would love for you to be perfect, but guess what? I'm not perfect. If you can get 90% of the way there without me getting involved, I'll take that any day of the week. And if somebody is giving it their honest best and did not cross my line in the sand, I would never criticize them. Now, we could have a conversation. What did you learn? And what would you do differently next time? And then that gives you the opportunity to have that coaching or mentoring session without making them feel demeaned or embarrassed. And so that's how I got my crew to step up to the plate. And along the way, they lifted burdens off my shoulders so that I didn't get caught up in the minutiae of chasing people around the ship trying to get something done. I had the opportunity to have the day to think about more strategic thoughts about how to better place the ship so that if we go into combat, we come out number one. Because at the end of the day, that's what our mission is. Mm-hmm.
One of the quotes that I feel like came from your book that really spoke to me that seems to get at this same point is, organizations should reward risk takers even if they fall short. So can you explain why this is so fundamental to attracting and keeping the right people?
So we are going through very tough times right now. And it requires us to think differently about how to get our mission accomplished and how to support our clients the best. And those of us who are proactive in leading that change won't be a victim of it. But if you fall back and continue doing the same thing because that's the way you've always done it, you may not generate the business that you need from your clients to keep your law firm strong. And so it constantly required me to challenge ourselves, is this the best way and is there a way to improve 1%? And so I think what your law firm managers need to understand is how to drive better client engagement and be proactive in pushing information to them before they ask for it so that they trust you and say, my lawyer's on the job.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And it comes up a lot with how we sort of teach the members of our coaching program, Lawyerist Lab, meeting client service expectations, because we live in a world where people are updated all day long in other sorts of ways and get a lot of instant gratification from things like even how they order food and how they get ride shares and things like that. And so that bleeds over a little bit into this idea of what do you expect from your attorney? You expect to be kept up to date. You expect to know where things are at in the process. Are you the holdup in the process? Do you have an important decision to make at that point in time? I think this also gets to how you properly hire the right people in your law firm, because I think the default is to go to, well, obviously, if I'm not getting the results from my team right now, I must not have the right people on my team. But another one of your ideas is this concept of helping less talented people transcend their own limitations. So how do you walk the line between this person is just maybe not capable of meeting the standards or doing this particular job the way that I need or would like them to, and this is an opportunity for me to really train somebody and own my own role in the process?
So before I answer that, I'd like to go back to the previous conversation.
Okay.
I used to do a lot of work in the auto industry. I still do. My number one pet peeve about my dealership is the service advisor never keeping me informed of what's going on with my car. In this day and age, I realize you're busy, but I don't want to have to play phone tag with you 10 times during the day to give you authorization to replace this part at $300. When you have a moment, text me and I'll text you right back. So I bet everybody in this country has had a lousy experience with their service advisor. And that determines whether you go back and do business from that dealership is that interaction. And so answering your question, I used to work for the Secretary of Defense, William Perry. I was his number two assistant. And my last day working for him, he brought me into his office and sat me down and said, Mike, no matter how hard you try, your ship is never going to be perfect. You're going to have disappointments every day. And he said, if you're disappointed in an outcome, I want you to remember one thing. He said, assume your crew wanted to do a great job. And if you don't get the results you're looking for, don't blame them first, but instead look inward and ask yourself what you could have done differently or better. Did you clearly communicate the goals to them? Did you give them the training necessary to be successful? Did you give them the time and the resources to do a great job? But most importantly, did the process support them delivering the results you were looking for? So it was William Perry who beat into my head, look at the process. The other thing that he told me my last day working for him, he said, the easiest word in the English language to pronounce is no. But if you develop a professional reputation where the first word out of your mouth is no, nobody is going to want to work with you. He said, if you develop a professional reputation where you will find a way to get to yes, that's who people want to work with. And I live in Miami Beach now, and it's something I've carried with me from the Navy to my personal business. And 3 years ago, it's noon. I had just come from the eye doctors. My pupils were dilated. I couldn't drive. And I get a call from a speaker bureau that had booked me in the past. And they said, Mike, there's an event for charity in Key West this afternoon at 4 p.m. And the speaker we had lined up to do it can't do it because the flight got canceled. Is there any way you could take this commitment? So I'm on the phone thinking, the flight's canceled. It's a 3-hour and 45-minute drive, and it's noon, and they want me to go on at 4. And I can't drive because my pupils are dilated. Oh, and it's for charity, and I'm not getting paid for it. And I'm trying to figure out a way to get to yes. And just then my cleaning lady walked in the front door. And I said, Oriana, get in the car. You're driving me to Key West. Oriana drives me to Key West. I get there at 3:50, go on at 4, done at 5. I had a speech the next day in Nashville. She dropped me at MIA at 8:30, caught my 9 p.m. flight. I did it because a brother needed help. What I never anticipated was he spread that story to every speaker bureau in Canada and the United States, and it probably resulted in 80 or 90 additional bookings for me that I would not have otherwise had, because I have tried to develop a professional reputation where I will find a way to get the yes. And that's what I tried to instill on that ship, was if our mission commanders have a request of us, you can say yes right on the spot. And if you want to say no, or if you think I might want to say no, I am the only one on this ship authorized to say no to a mission commander. And that's the reputation that we developed, is that ship that will bust a gut to find a way to help you get your mission accomplished. And that's how we became the number one in the Pacific Fleet.
I think that advice is brilliant, because I think this is where we have a lot of conversations with lawyers who are stuck on whether it's the right time to hire, or they've got a person in a role and they're thinking there's something going wrong here. So number one, you have to step back and figure out, was this bad management or truly a bad hire? But I think where they often get stuck is thinking that this is a yes or a no, and I have to make a decision on either one of those right now. And this concept of find a way to get to yes, if you're finding a way to get to yes, and there's a lot of resistance to it, or there's lots of problems that are popping up, that can really help you make that decision about where you go from there. I'm going to start implementing that in my daily life, because I love that. You don't want to be known as the person who just says no, that is the default answer, doesn't even try to really strategize and take that step back. So we're going to take a quick break to hear from some of our sponsors. And when we come back, we'll be talking a little bit more about leadership and management and how to empower the right people in your firm.
Supercharge your team with the power of Text Expander. Your team can do more with the same resources. Less repetition, fewer errors, and greater consistency will have your team feeling like they've hopped off a bicycle and into a Ferrari. Keep the team consistent, accurate, and current so you can work faster and smarter with Text Expander's powerful shortcuts and abbreviations to streamline and speed up everything you type. Create powerful snippets to save you time so that all you type is a short abbreviation, and Text Expander does the rest for you. Keep your whole team communicating efficiently and with consistent language. Text Expander is available on Mac, Windows, Chrome, iPhone, and iPad. And Lawyerist podcast listeners get 20% off their first year. Visit textexpander.com/podcast to learn more. Support for today's episode comes from Back Office Betty's, the only virtual receptionist service exclusively dedicated to small law firms that offers a plan with unlimited calls. Their highly specialized service boasts customized call handling, relentlessly friendly team members, and unmatched quality. The Betty's are ready to help you grow your firm even when you're out of the office. Visit backofficebetty's.com/lawyerist to try them out for 1 week free. Use the promo code podcast to receive $150 off your first month.
Trust the only payment solution offered through the ABA Advantage program, LawPay. As the ability to accept payments online becomes an increasingly essential part of your practice, LawPay provides your firm with a proven and trusted solution. With LawPay, you receive a simple, secure way to accept client credit cards and e-check payments from anywhere. LawPay understands the unique compliance requirements placed on attorneys, which is why their solution was developed specifically to correctly separate earned and unearned fees and protect IOLTA accounts from any third-party debiting, giving you peace of mind that your transactions are always handled correctly. To learn more or to get started, visit lawpay.com/lawyerist today. Okay, welcome back, everybody. So another key component of leadership is you have to be respected as the leader and known for making good decisions, but you can't make them all on your own. So from a management standpoint, how do you go about enabling some of the other people in your organization to make decisions, both to take that pressure off of you, but also to empower them as, you know, aspiring leaders too?
So when I worked for the Secretary of Defense, I was not in a leadership role. I was an individual contributor. And every day, a 4-foot stack of paper would come into the office. They gave me a box of yellow highlighters, and my job was to get this 4-foot stack of paper and highlight what I thought was important for SecDef to see and get it down to maybe 8 or 9 inches. And so when I got it down to 8 or 9 inches, I would put it in the general's in basket. And it was the senior military assistant. It's the same job Colin Powell had when he was a 3-star. John Kelly had the job as a 3-star. Probably our most important 3-star job in the military. And that was my direct boss and then the secretary. From my desk, I could watch him work. And at the beginning, he threw 90% of what I thought was important in the burn bag for destruction. Never went to the secretary. And the office was so pressure-packed and under so much stress, he never had time to give me feedback. And as a result, I was miserable because I wasn't getting any better. And after about a month of this, I'm thinking, I can't do this for another 6 months. I'm just going to quit. And then it hit me, I'm going to try to train myself to think like the general. And every night at 8:30, when he went home from work, I would go into his office, take the burn bag, dump it out on his desk, and I'd compare everything of mine that he threw away and compared it to what he sent on to the secretary. And what I tried to do was to train myself to think like my boss. And I got that 8 or 9 inches of stuff down to maybe 1 or 2 inches. And I'd sit there at my desk and he would just rubber stamp it and send it right on to the secretary. I went from like a 10% effectiveness rating to maybe 95 or 96%. And I'm feeling better about myself. So I continued to play the game. In meetings, they never asked me for my opinion, but I would sit in the back row and I'd listen to the presentation. And before they made a decision, I would say to myself, if I'm the 3-star, based on what's been presented, what decision would I make? And if I made the same decision that the boss made, it was like, gee, I can think like a 3-star. If they made a different decision, it was, there's a gap in my training I need to go fill. And what that enabled me to do was to start anticipating what needed to be done before the general even thought of it. And I could be there with a solution. And he started to trust me. And he put me in charge of the SecDef trip planning team, the security detail, the communications team. I had 45 people reporting to me in a job that was historically an individual contributor job. And do you know who I got the feedback from? His wife. She came into the office one day and came back to my desk and said, I want to thank you for everything you're doing for Paul. Because for the first time since he's had this job, he comes home at night happy. If you're going home at night unhappy, you're not doing yourself any favors and you're not doing your family a favor as well. If you can develop your team and get them to start thinking the way you want them to and have feedback and discussion so that they can up their level of performance, they will lift burdens off your shoulders. One, so you can do higher value work, but two, go home happy at night.
I feel like there's a lot of parallels between this idea of thinking like your boss. If you are the boss, there's probably a lot of power in, like for our lawyers, thinking like your client. So how would you recommend that somebody do that to make sure that all the different components of their communication and the services that they're offering. Where do you start with thinking like your client to get that process started?
You talk to them and find out what's most important to them. Like if my service advisor knew that I hate playing phone tag with them, he would find a different way to communicate with me. And so if you understand how your client likes to be communicated with and what the periodicity is, that way you understand what they're looking for out of you and you can deliver that. In addition to the legal work, how it's delivered is awfully important, especially since everybody's under so much stress these days. So the only way you do that is to talk to them and get to, you'd say, I'm here for you, but I need to know what are your triggers so that I can make sure I meet or exceed the expectations you have of me in communicating with you when you want me to communicate.
I think that that's really so important to do. And even if you're not comfortable with asking potential clients about that process and getting that feedback from them at the beginning, you can pull a lot of valuable data from your last several clients in the testimonials that they give you, in the reviews that they've left you online. What was it about your service, their experience, your communication that stood out to them? Because that can be indicative of what it's like for a lot of your clients if you start to see trends in your different practice areas.
So my books are sold on Amazon, and It's Your Ship has sold 1.1 million copies. And there are 1,200 reviews of my book on Amazon. 1,180 are five star. And I disregard the five star ratings and I look at the 20 that say something negative so that I can understand the perspective of the reviewer. And my favorite review is from this college student. He's 20 years old. And he says, kind of a lame book, but my business professor made us read it for class. And then he said, but I've read worse though. So I took that, he's read worse books, so that made me feel pretty darn good. But I sincerely read every review. And if one out of 100 have something bad to say, I want to know why. And that way I can become better. Because I'm not perfect. I'm never going to be perfect. It's a constant pursuit. And if I have to change, I will.
And I think there are a lot of connections there between doing something like writing a book and, you know, leading a law firm where you're going to have future clients and you're going to have future cases. I mean, we do the same thing with our company book that's on Amazon as well. I read through those reviews, and for the ones that maybe aren't the five stars or the ones that have really good feedback, we can pull a lot of ideas for that and say, this definitely needs to be included in the second edition, or the next time we write a book or do a project like this, we can use that to improve it. So when you're in something that you're really trying to grow for the future, even that feedback that stings a little bit when you first get it can really help you kind of course correct in that moment and give a better experience the next time around. Kind of on that process of, it's very easy to think about when something bad happens or when a project doesn't go as planned or when a case is lost, to sit back and really dive into the details critiquing it. But one of the things that I pulled from your thought leadership is this concept of looking at every single project, even the successes, and allowing there to be somewhat of an open forum on critiquing even the successes. Can you talk a little bit about why that process is so important and how to go about it?
So I picked it up from the Army. And the general I worked for in the Secretary of Defense's office was an Army three-star. And in the Army, after everything they do, after every event, after every process, everybody involved gets together to critique it. They talk about what it was they were trying to accomplish, what the conditions were at the time, what worked, what didn't work, what would they do better in the future. And I loved it. I took it with me to Benfold, and I added three criteria on Benfold. You check your ego at the door. There's no retribution for what gets said, and anybody in the group can respectfully challenge anybody else. The lowest ranking seaman involved in a project on that ship in an after action review could respectfully challenge me in front of everybody else. And if they were right, I would say, I didn't realize that I was causing this additional work. I'm going to change. If they were wrong, it meant there was something that they didn't understand about the process, and it enabled me to have a coachable moment so that I could give them the 30,000-foot view and here's us down at sea level executing. And so we critiqued both the successes and the failures, and we would also do mid-course critiques to make sure a project in mid-course was hitting the objectives that we expected of it. So it's this constant feedback and a constant safe harbor where people can tell you the truth. And I don't want people lying to me. I don't want people covering it up. If there's a problem, include me in it so I can be part of the solution. In 2 years, we missed one commitment, and it was a doozy. We were to operate with 3 aircraft carrier battle groups. We were to provide protection against enemy submarines. In the morning, we were to get underway. My number one department head knocks on my door and says, "We can't participate." And I said, "Why not?" He said, "Because the sonar is broken." And I understand equipment breaks. I said, "How long have you known about it?" He said, 2 weeks. And I didn't yell at him. I didn't scream. I said, "John, I've never been more disappointed in anybody than I am in you right now. In the last 2 weeks, you took away all my options. You could have come to me and said, 'Captain, this broke. Here's my plan to get it fixed.' Captain, this broke. I don't have a plan. Let me get back to you. Or, Captain, I need your help." And instead of ending his career, I looked inward and I realized I did not have a set process with definitive timelines as to what happens when a piece of equipment breaks. So I implemented a process. From that day forward, if something breaks, you have 60 seconds to pick up the phone and call me and tell me that something isn't right. And I'm not going to shoot you. It's just that I want to know about it so that I can help you solve the problem. And so the failure was mine. We missed the commitment. Nobody got killed. Nobody got injured. We lived to fight another day. But if people try to cover things up, and sometimes they do it because of confidence in themselves, and then they fall short, bring me in sooner so that I could help you get it back on track.
So part of that is being open to giving feedback to yourself, right? To know where you could have had the opportunity to either communicate better or establish a system and process. Do you have any suggestions for how to deliver feedback to team members when it isn't necessarily you, your leadership, or the systems, but it's something with them? That's something a lot of our attorneys struggle with, is figuring out, how do I deliver feedback effectively and make it clear to this person that I want to support them and I want them to grow and learn from this, but I'm also pointing out that this didn't go as I expected and this was a disappointment.
Get them to critique it for you. Before you give them the answer, say, "Let's talk about what the objectives were, and then tell me, do you think you met the objectives?" And hopefully they'll be able to self-diagnose and tell you what they did wrong, and then you can give them steps on how to improve it. The problem comes when they think they did something great and it didn't align with what you wanted. You have to have cold, hard facts. You can't let these discussions be adversarial or emotional or confrontational. Just have the facts so that you can provide concrete guidance on what you expect from them the next time. But I would always start out and say, "Were you satisfied with that? And if so, why? But if not, tell me about it, so that we can help you do better in the future."
That's an excellent tip. I've taken so much away from your books and this interview. Where can our listeners go to learn more about you and the work that you do?
So I've got a website, apgleadership.com. And my partner, Stacy Cunningham, she lives in Philadelphia, created a virtual navigation guide where you can, it's a reasonable cost, it's not expensive, get on and do a leadership lesson a week. And it's maybe 15 or 20 minutes a week. It's not a huge investment of your time, but it walks you through everything that's in the book and gives you tips on how to implement it in your own firm. And so it's called the Navigation Guide at apgleadership.com.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the show and sharing with us. I think that'll be a really helpful strategy to break it down and also point out that it's your role as a leader to ask questions about your own leadership and to constantly be growing and investing your time and energy into professional development. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
The Lawyerist Podcast is produced by Bailey Tiller and edited by Christopher Eng. Are you ready to implement the ideas we discuss here into your practice? Wondering what to do next? Here are your first two steps. First, if you haven't read the Small Firm Roadmap yet, grab the first chapter for free at lawyerist.com/book. Looking for help beyond the book? Let's chat about whether our coaching communities are right for you. Head to lawyerist.com/community/lab to schedule a 15-minute call with our community manager. The views expressed by the participants are their own and not endorsed by the Legal Talk Network. Nothing said in this podcast is legal advice for you.